Okay, and we're back. This is Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is a jumpstart for 70484. I'm here with Darren. I'm Jerry. This is Module 2. We're going to be talking about the basics and the fundamentals of XAML. If you were going to describe XAML, you would say XAML is?
XAML is a markup language that allows us to declaratively specify what our user interface is going to look like.
It looks and feels like XML, but certainly is more than that.
It's more than that. It's somewhat like HTML from a certain perspective.
That's right, in the way that it marks up the UI itself. And it is also almost a layer on top of C#. It actually is talking and instantiating classes inside C# and inside the WinRT.
That's one of the key things to take away, is that it is an object instantiation environment. You're actually creating these things.
I think it would be beneficial if we see it. So can we open up a blank XAML app and take a look at what the syntax looks like?
Sure. So we're going to start off with that.
All right.
Let's go and have a look at, where's my mouse? So here we have Visual Studio. So I'm just going to create a new project.
While you're doing that, I'll just make the point. You're creating a new project with Visual Studio 2013. That's the version of Visual Studio that's required for creating a Windows 8.1 app. It has to be running also on Windows 8.1.
Correct.
You can use that. You can use Visual Studio on Windows 8. You can use it on Windows 7 to create WPF apps, Silverlight apps, things like that. But if you're doing what we're doing today, it's Windows 8.1, Visual Studio 2013. Really, what we're doing today, you can do on any flavor, all the way from the free Express version to Professional, all the way up to the ultimate version, which I think is what you and I have installed right now.
Exactly. So let's just talk a little bit about the environment that we got presented in front of us. We kind of showed Visual Studio a little bit beforehand, but the key things that we've got here is we have a design preview, a nice visual designer, and there's something very different really in what we had in 2012 and 2013 over than what we had in Visual Studio 2010.
There was a designer in 2010, but nobody liked using it because it just wasn't up to snuff.
Yeah, it really didn't have a parity. It wasn't what you see is what you're going to get, and right. didn't really support the kind of the richness of the capabilities of the other tool that we use very commonly, which is Expression Blend.
Right, and so what we did between 2010 and 2012 is we took the designer out of Blend, threw away the designer in Visual Studio, created a designer that you could be shared between the two. So now you get that beautiful experience of Blend inside Visual Studio, and they're in perfect parity now. So one gets improved, they both get improved.
Yeah, which is a great story for us as developers.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know a lot of developers resist using the designer. They feel like it's a crutch when it's really not, especially now that it's been so improved.
Exactly. So anyway, what we've got here is I've opened up mainpage.xaml, and we see the two views. I've minimized down the design view here, and we're actually looking at the XAML itself. So kind of let's walk through really what the key things are that's being shown here. I avoided saying element because I don't want to overload that term.
Yeah, great. You're right. It does look like HTML, I can see.
And so, you know, we have an XML document, so it's going to follow all of those rules. There are elements nested. If you open an element, you must close an element, and so on and so forth.
So it's always valid XML. Zoom in just a little bit. Make your screen just a hair bigger there. And which is nice. I think it's worth saying that Visual Studio that's what we literally just did. We're going to make the font bigger. Done. There you go.
Victory, and we're done.
By the way, the ability to make that font so easily, you could roll in and out of it like that, is that Visual Studio itself is a XAML application, as is Blend, both written in WPF.
Yeah, so we can make it really, really unusable all the way up to really, really unusable.
All right, so wait, leave it right there for a second. I see an X colon class. I see that as, I know XML, so I know that is a namespace. That X colon is a namespace. How does XAML use namespaces?
So it's using namespaces to basically include extensions into the whole ecosystem of what's available. We have a baseline specification of what's going to be in XAML, and that's part of this XAML presentation namespace, which is the default namespace.
Got it. So this is the initial parser, so it knows what to do with it.
Yep.
And then you can add more by just doing XML and S.
Yep. Introduce an XML namespace, provide a shorthand representation for that namespace, and then bring in these alternate schemas. So here, for example, we have the XAML schema, which provides the extensions which allow us to turn around and associate with this XAML page that we have a backing class called app1.mainpage.
All right, let's build out a simple thing. I can see that the page, which is not a visual, right? Mm-hmm. The page is just a holder. Yep. So its base visual is a grid. I can see that down in line 10. And a grid, we'll talk about all the different layout controls, so mm-hmm. let's just roll with it for now. If I wanted to start building something here, let's build out that app that we just did. Let's drag on a text box that says first name, let's say. Or maybe it didn't say first name. Let's just roll with first name.
So let's bring in...
So here's your toolbox, and there's a lot of controls here. We're not going to walk through all of them. Some are layout controls. Some are interactive controls. Some are data input controls, mm-hmm. and you can kind of play with all of them.
Yeah, and also as you add in extensions such as advertising and so on and so forth, those controls can also be registered into the toolbox. We've kind of got two major groups, common XAML controls, which is the name is exactly what it is really, mm-hmm. And then all the XAML controls that are available. So I'm just going to expand up the common one.
If you can't find one, there's also a search right at the tip top.
Yeah, so if I want to find the text box.
That's really nice. I do
like
that.
It is.
Now, you could type text box into the XAML directly, or you could drag it onto the design surface. Is there a difference?
There is no difference. What you get, obviously, with the by dragging in is you get a certain positioning based upon where you drop it, and that may not necessarily be where you are. Your mileage may vary. I tend to do a lot of my initial skeleton mocking out of my UI just by typing. You know, I'm very familiar with the controls that I want and the layout elements and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Equally.
Well, Darren, developers who know and worked with XAML for so long, we're accustomed to not going to the designer. So you and I, we can type it so quickly because we were forced to. Today, a developer may have a different experience because they're so fluid inside the designer.
In fact, we should just open Notepad.
You could.
Or not.
You could, right? That's the ultimate Visual Studio.
So let's just drag in a text box and see what we're going to get. So I drag it over, and we get a text box. Now, as I mentioned, I'm going to minimize down my toolbox right now. We get a lot of additional information by virtue of the fact we've positioned it on the design surface. Mm. We see that we have horizontal alignment left. So really, what we're talking about here is how things are being positioned within the grid. You'll notice that the text box has been added as a child element of the grid.
Mm-hmm. And so when you see text box, that is literally a class called TextBox, mm-hmm. and its presence in your XAML declared like that executes that class, invokes it, runs its constructor even right here inside the designer. And where you have horizontal alignment, that's a property of the class being set to, in this case, an enumerable.
Yeah. So again, we're talking about XML. Horizontal alignment is an attribute on the element of type TextBox.
Right. Now, margin is special because you would never be able to set margin to 200 and something, comma, 100 and something, comma, 00, right? That's weird. But XAML's doing something special.
Yeah. It's effectively has the ability to convert that string into a series of values. And mm-hmm. so what we have there is a separator. It's very much the same as CSS. You know, we were talking about how XAML is like HTML. A lot of these elements that we can use, or attributes, I should say, to modify the presentation is very much like CSS.
Very much.
You know, the same similar sort of rules. So if we actually move left to right on the margin values.
In fact, a lot of these things that you set, all the properties, and we'll talk later about styling, can be moved out into what we call resource dictionaries, mm-hmm. back to this your CSS analogy.
Exactly.
Perfect. External file.
Yeah, so if we look at margin, moving left to right, 281 represents the left. 194 represents the top. First zero is the right margin, and last zero is the bottom margin.
Right. Now it's unlike CSS because it doesn't start at the top and going around. It starts at the left and goes around.
Indeed.
But the concept's identical.
We can only stretch it so far. If I remove the margin, what we can see is it changes the position of the text box, so it's mm-hmm. wedged up the top left-hand side. And that's going to be kind of your default layout within this grid box, that everything is going to be anchored to the top left.
Now, I noticed the size of it is very specific to the text that's in it. How did it get the size that it has?
So, common with a lot of elements within XAML, they're content-sized, which basically means that there are a number of rendering passes that really occur in that. If you think of a text box, it really isn't a single element. It's actually a composition of many visual elements that have been put together and rendered out on the page. Mm-hmm. So the text box itself, if we were to explore into its definition, is made up of borders, highlights, fill colors, rectangles, and so on and so forth, plus text elements that are actually placed within there. When the text box is being rendered up, we actually have a content control that's presenting text inside of that.
Yeah, so when I look at button or at a text box, I see that it has a text property. Mm-hmm. But if we were to add a button to the canvas, its text property would surprise me. See if we can add a button. Oh, first of all, this is going to be a good example, too, of how big it can get,
yep.
Right? Because it'll take up all the space, like you were saying. But now, what can I put in a button? I can obviously put text. So just say click. Or hello world, which is just as good. And so it'll be in the middle, right? So you want to, maybe we'll set its horizontal alignment. Or nope, that's great.
So here we have the button control, and it's positioned, as you mentioned, floating in the middle, mm-hmm. which happens to be the default positioning for anything in the grid.
Yeah. Now, text isn't the only thing I can put in there, because this is not a text property you're setting. This is the content that you're setting. And content controls are special inside XAML, because it allows me to do things like, and look what you're doing, adding a stack panel. And a stack panel is just a layout control that allows us to put things on top of each other. And so here I've got a text box, or a text block, or I can't quite tell,
text box
that that's inside that stack panel. So here's what you're really doing. You're taking a XAML control and putting it inside a button. And this is really a fundamental piece of XAML to say that all content controls can take any XAML inside of it. That means you as a developer slash designer get to really think, what can I do that is best for the user here? I'm not trapped inside a specific paradigm to say a button must not have an image, a button must not have a stack panel. I don't know if I recommend putting a text box inside a button, to be honest, but the point is beautiful in that it could go anywhere because it's a content control instead of like a text box, which does actually require text. You can't put a button inside a text box.
Yeah. And now, as you can see, I've created a beautiful UI element for a button.
You've done a great job with that.
That is
your best UI I think I've seen in a long time.
Shall we ship it? So what we have is a button that contains a stack panel, and as the name suggests, it's going to stack the elements contained therein. We have three text boxes that happen to say hello world, and then we have a rectangle that's 200 wide by 200 high filled with red.
All inside a button.
And obviously this is a flagrant abuse of the whole composition system in terms of putting
proof
this together.
Proof that it can be done, never do it.
Yeah,
right.
I would strongly recommend not doing this nor shipping it. But it really illustrates the flexibility you have in terms of how you compose your UI.
Perfect. Let's set the background color of the button for just a second, but let's do it with button.background.
Okay.
And let's do it to a solid color brush. So we know that we can set a button, the button background as an attribute on, or attribute, as some might say, on the button, just like this. We could type in red, or no, not red because you already have it, but you could type in blue, and it would read blue, translate it into a class called solid color brush for us. But
yes,
we can explicitly set it as well if we wanted to use a complex property type. So let's do that. Let's say, and the way we would do that is not in an attribute, but instead we would call out the specific property. Here's button.background. And now, because you've done it this way, I can start referencing classes or other controls directly here. So here I only have solid color brush that would be allowed, or any other brushes that would be allowed. And you could start setting its properties, like green or yes, and opacity or anything else that it might support. So that if you don't want to take the default instruction of that class, you can do it this way. So two ways of setting properties. The first is using attributes to set the initial property and taking whatever its defaults are. The second is a complex way, like you just demonstrated, so that I can specify a custom control or a custom class or do more than what the default would have allowed me otherwise.
And I mean, there's another way as well, and we're going to touch on it later in terms of managing resources, that we can, instead of actually apply an explicit value, we can reference something that's actually defined as a static resource in a resource dictionary.
Right, and translate that back to how we were talking before, that's almost like a class in CSS. Mm-hmm. So you can create that class name in CSS and reference it. You can do a very similar thing inside XAML. Perfect, absolutely perfect. What if we were to take that button and wanting to interact with it? Like, what if I wanted to click that button and have some sort of operation?
Okay.
I've built buttons before in other operating systems or other technologies like web and even Windows Forms. And how do I add an event handler so I can make this more than just something pretty?
Okay, so again, we've kind of explored the whole idea of the attributes, and so it kind of makes sense that any of these things which we'll call events that where you interact with them will be exposed up as attributes. So if I start to explore, I can see I have a click event.
Ah, yeah, that's right. And so you could create a, what are you referencing there inside that click value?
So this string is actually going to reference a method name, and this method name belongs in the code behind for this particular page or this element. And so before I actually go into here, I could say go to definition, doesn't exist, but it'll create it for us as part of the tooling that's available.
That is brilliant.
That's awesome.
No, Darren, I didn't know it would do that. That is awesome. You can just type it, say go to definition, and it'll force
and
it
it'll
to
force it create it.
Oh my gosh.
It's magic.
By the way, you right click and said go to definition, but you could have also hit F12.
Yes.
And go to definition has been super revved inside Visual Studio 2013. And just a quick call out, day before yesterday, I did another MVA course with Uni, the lead for the Blend team. And we went through all the advanced tooling for XAML development. And 2 weeks from now, the recording for that will be available. Right now, we're barely going to cover some of the features and tooling for XAML developers. We went into great detail. And if you were there with me then, you probably know what I'm talking about. Or you can look that up. It'll be on MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com in about 2 weeks from now. So that'll be Christmas time.
Yep. So that's one way that we could do this. I'm going to actually delete that right now. I'm going to come back to mainpage.xaml. And I'm going to remove that click. And now we're actually going to look at the properties window.
Ah, yeah. Now, what's nice about the properties window is this is brought over from Blend. Blend has always had a beautiful experience with the product. It's very rich and gives you all kinds of cool editors. And so, actually, let's move the picture-in-picture to the side. There you go. And there's our properties window brought over from Blend so we have a similar experience. And keep going.
So, what we have here is the ability, as you can see, many of the things that I've actually entered over here, such as the content, are actually being mirrored in the properties. We have the ability to explore things like layout, very, very complex. We're not necessarily going to be able to touch on all of the features and everything that's available here, but I want to draw your
attention
to it.
It's a neat way to kind of spelunk into a control if you don't know much about it. I will do this one call out there. So either group together, the second or the third one is common, and there's this little little caret or what chevron at the bottom of the common section that expands and shows even more common. So sometimes there's properties that developers miss because they don't see that expansion, but just like the toolbox, if you're wondering where the command property is, you can just search for command and it'll bring it up for you.
And the same as in the toolbox, as you mentioned, searching. So if I type enable, we can bring up everything that brings up interactions based around the enabled properties and so on. There is another aspect to this, which is rather than just listing all the attributes, we actually have a specific view that filters and shows all of the events.
Yeah.
And as we can see, there are a plethora of events that are exposed up. Many of these are inherited by virtue of being UI elements, framework elements. Click is something in particular we're interested with the button. So again, I can just double click in here, and it will actually go through, create me a default method name, button_click. That name is derived because this control itself was not named, and so it uses the control. And if I had multiple buttons, I'd have button1_click, button2_click.
So I always rename those, by the way.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yep. Yeah. But you can get that by default. And so now we're in a method in the code behind of mainpage.xaml, which is mainpage.xaml.cs, that has a signature you'll become very familiar with if you're using events, which is fundamentally you get an object, which is a reference to the originator of the event, plus you get a value that's derived from event args that is any parameters or context that is necessary to understand this particular event.
And a routed event arg is special to XAML in the way that it bubbles up through the hierarchy as well. And, I also wanted to say that properties are also special to XAML. When you were in the properties dialogue, those properties, a majority of them, are what we call dependency properties. And the dependency properties are different than the standard CLR in part because they work like a property bag, not taking up memory resources until they're actually set. But in addition, they raise events to allow the UI to reflect changes that are done behind the scenes so that you can interact with a control or the data that it may be bound to and know that the UI is keeping up with you without having to actually talk to the UI.
Yep.
So what are we doing? Creating a message dialogue and showing it.
Yep.
Click the button and hello world?
Pretty much.
Oh yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. So while you're doing it, I'll just point out in Windows 8 development, this is different than regular desktop development in there. There is no message box.
Yeah. So
this is the message box.
Run this application up. And here we go. Ship it.
Best app ever. let's talk about some of the binding functions. So,
absolutely.
Let me see. I am... go to the binding slide just for a second. So it's slide 41. I don't know if you want to just type it in and jump to it. But there you go. Right there.
Do you want this one?
Right there is where we are going to talk about data binding.
Data binding. That's a good thing.
Data binding, honestly, is a differentiator of XAML beyond belief. I mean, this is one of the things that you can accomplish this type of data binding, what we're about to see, with a lot of different libraries you might add to JavaScript.
Yeah,
other
Knockout
places.
JS would be an example.
This is all built in to the framework and extremely performant, right? It was built for this. This is what XAML is about.
I mean, and this is actually a key differentiator, I think, for the WinRT variant of XAML over, say, the Silverlight and WPF versions of XAML in terms of the performance of data binding.
Yeah.
You know, there were definitely some opportunities to enhance the performance of those implementations because they used a lot of reflection at runtime.
That's right.
To actually perform the bindings. And so if you had very, very complex, say, grid controls with multiple data sources with multiple properties, the binding could actually have an impact in the rendering of your control if you had to scan through these very, very rich objects with thousands of properties.
That's right.
So
since reflection's not allowed in the runtime,
right,
an entirely new mechanism had to be put into place.
Yeah.
And one that, since you're building it from scratch, let's do it right, and it's extremely performant.
It's extremely performant. It does a lot of, you know, during your compile time, it actually is very, very explicit about what you're doing with your binding.
Yeah.
So just worth pointing that one out.
So actually, let's jump in. Let's walk through the slides. That'll kind of help us get some of the pieces that we need. So there's the button that you just created, right? You can say that the content of it is click me, and that is a literal value that's hard-coded in.
Yep.
So that's a problem all the way around. Anytime we have a literal hard-coded value, we're introducing a potential problem. One of them might just be localization. Before we get to even data binding, you say potato, I say patate. Oh no, the other way around. And you ship this over to France and it's not going to be in the right language.
Sure.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about dynamic data that allows us to say what the value is going to be and control it all from the code, and we can morph the UI based on conditions that are going on, records that need to be shown, and things like that. So you can have literal values that are hard-coded in, or we can bind what that value should be back to a property in some sort of class.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a property in a class, by the way. It could also be a property of another element, which, of course, is a class.
Yeah, so what do we typically call that class if we're going to be binding information to it?
Well, yes, of course. So if I'm writing a Windows 8 application I'm using XAML. One. Mm-hmm. Two, if I'm using XAML, I'm implementing a design pattern called Model View View Model. Mm-hmm. Model View View Model basically means every UI I create has an accompanying view model with it. So we call the UI the view, and then we have an accompanying view model that presents data or exposes data one way or another. It doesn't present it because that's still part of the view.
Is the code behind a view model?
The code behind is not the view model. The code behind is really there as a utility location to interact with the UI. So I have some sort of storyboard that needs to run. I have some sort of user interaction I need to handle. Great. Put that right there inside the code behind. But as far as the data itself and things that are repeatable and reusable, things that I could test, I'll move that out to the view model. So there really are three files. There's the XAML itself, the code behind for that XAML, and then the accompanying view model that's just a class and should and probably does implement a special interface just for this pattern called iNotifyPropertyChange.
Okay. So it's not evil or wrong, though, to put code in the code behind?
It is never evil or rote. In fact, if I were just knocking out an app, sometimes, Darren, I won't have a view model at all. Right? Mm-hmm. Just get it done. It's right there in the code behind. And if any developer dares to look down on me because of it, they don't get it because that's not what it's about. Right? If I'm writing my own app and it's not an issue of maintainability or size, then having a view model could actually be overkill.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So dynamic data, We're going to touch on converting data, but we'll come back to that one, shall we?
Let's go ahead. So I have a property. Let's say it's and that you want to bind to it. So it's a date that you want to bind to. And so of course,
is this like that red? Yeah, when I type red,
it's a lot like red. Only I have to do it myself instead of building it in. And so I am going to bind. Let's go back to date for a second. I'm going to bind my birthday, and it's of course it's type is date time. Mm-hmm. And when I render that into the UI, it's going to show the default date time dot to string as its value. What I want is for it to show, you know, the day, the month, the year, be really pretty, not show the time at all. And so that I'll use a converter, and the converter sits on the view, not back in my view model, but on the view. That means as the data comes in, first it's handed off to the converter, comes back reformatted the way it's meant to be seen. I could also convert it back, by the way, although I would say 99% of all the converters out there are only one way, just so you can present the data that you want. In the way that you want to.
Yeah.
As a caveat.
Absolutely.
Caveat is that converters allow you to see the data the way you want, but they are a common source of performance problems. Mm-hmm. Because 1, 2, 3, 10, 20, no big deal. But now I have a repeater that has, you know, 5,000 records, 500 records. Each of those has one, maybe two converters in that. All of a sudden, my UI is executing these converters at an exponential rate, and I'm like, man, data binding in XAML is so freaking slow, but that's not true.
Yeah.
I'm killing it using all of these converters. So I think sometimes a common solution is to solve it back in the view model, have a second property that shows it the way you want. Yeah, that's an easy way. Or just reconsider the whole thing. Maybe you're okay with the default. That's another possibility.
I think, you know, and the point that you're raising there as well is that, you know, the system is so flexible that you can come up with these very clever solutions sometimes, but you can get too clever for yourself. That, as you say, you can start exploiting all of these features to excess and then end up creating some sort of debt around your performance and rendering and so on and so forth.
That's right.
You know, and so use all this stuff with moderation. You know, again, if you're building these incredibly complex UIs.
You just have to feel it out. I mean, we don't want this to come across as don't use converters because they're wonderful. We do want this to come across as if you're starting to see performance impacts, look to see if you're using too many converters.
Absolutely. So we also kind of mentioned this in terms of the view model pattern in terms of updating the UI. We mentioned iNotify property changed, which is the interface which specifies the contract that your view model implements that allows you to push from your view model and tell the UI, hey, this value has changed, please refresh it. And that kind of really talks about binding itself in that there's a couple of different
directions
ways of binding, yes.
Yeah. So a UI element can ask for the view model to talk to it. So that's a one-way communication.
So the view is pulling the value from your view model.
As you change the value in the view model, let's say it's a time, it's just a clock. Mm-hmm. And so the view model has a timer, so nothing to do with the XAML, right? You've never even seen the XAML. The view model has a property of date time, like we were talking just a second ago, and it's constantly being updated by a dispatch timer that keeps it correct. As it gets updated, that iNotify property change raises the property change event, and the UI, which has a one-way binding, is always up to date as well. You never have to tell the UI to update. It's listening automatically because of this interface you've implemented.
Yep.
But there's another direction, right?
Exactly.
Sometimes it's not just a view. You have a text box. In a text box, the user is going to be entering data, and you want whatever it is that they're entering, let's say it's first name, they're entering in their first name, you want that view model to have that first name as well. So you have a one-way or a two-way. So in the case of a text box, you always would use two-way.
Yes.
I mean, it'd be weird not, I can't imagine a scenario, maybe if it's read-only, I still can't, where you'd have two-way so that whatever the user does, it goes both ways. There is a update trigger, and I think this is new to Windows 8.1, but it's not new to WPF developers.
Correct.
And this update trigger, you can set the value to be property changed.
Property changed.
And as the user types, it's writing it back to the view model. But without that, the user had to blur that basically, lose the focus.
Lose
of
focus
the text
from
box.
There. And I think that, you know, there's one more of the binding, which is the one time, which is effectively, again, that's a performance optimization.
Huge optimization. You're right.
Yeah. If you're going to be showing something statically, really, from your view model, and it's only ever going to be pulled that one
title
time.
Title of the page, maybe.
Yeah. set that to one time, it stops all the cycles around monitoring for those changes. It doesn't hook up any of those things and really can optimize a complex page.
Yeah, it really can. And so if I did have the title and I, well, back to our clock, if I set that clock to show the time and I make that one time, obviously it'll show the time, but only the time when it launched. Yeah.
Very erudite. Thank you.
Let's think about the, there's one other, the iNotify collection changed.
Yes.
And this is a big deal. You know, you want to you want to have data like the date in your view model, but you might want lots of data in a collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're talking about kind of lists of data. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we think about the examples of the apps that we showed during our kind of design overview.
Yep. Like news and Bing or something
like that. There's lots of grids. There's lots of lists. There's lots of presentations of multiple elements and so on and so forth. And so, you know, we want to know when something's been added or removed from those lists.
Right.
And so you could either create your own complex implementation or you could use something like
iNotify collection changed, which is built into the observable collection.
Yeah.
So if you're a XAML developer, you definitely already know about the observable collection. So don't use an array. Don't use a standard collection. Don't use a standard list. Use the observable collection every time you have repeated data or you have groups of data inside your view model. That means your view model can remove, add, reorder anything it wants right there inside it, and the UI keeps up with you. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful.
Absolutely. And there's a performance optimized variant that's read-only that, again, implements kind of that idea of reducing the amount of additional processing cycles associated with maintaining your bindings.
Yeah. Let's go back to Visual Studio for a second. Let's build a quick little app of two text boxes. And let's just bind those together with using element binding.
So
we can do binding back to the view model, but we can also bind to absolutely anything. And so in this case, we're going to bind from one text box to another text box. So this is element binding. We can bind one property to another property. They don't have to match. And we could use a converter if we wanted to. But in this case, let's just make it so one looks like the other.
So, okay, so let me just do a little bit of housekeeping to clear things up.
Yep, no problem. I do want to talk about this just for a second that this is a very valid scenario. You might have an interaction that only has to do with the UI and never has to do with the data. It might be that the title, you know, you're editing a username at the time and you want the title of the page to show the current user or the current record that's being visible. You allow the user to edit that, but you don't want to talk back to the view model. Totally valid. So element binding is nice and powerful. So here's two text boxes right on top of each other. I noticed that you didn't give them a specific size, so they took all the size that they could.
Yep.
That's the way XAML works, right? You want, it will grow to all of its possible available size until you constrain it.
Well, shall we put a constraint?
No, I love it.
You
love
like it? You're happy with that?
I think it was great to make the point.
Okay, so here we have.
I want to show a couple different ways to do the binding. So for the top text box, if it's okay with you, let's go to the properties dialog and find the text property for this text box. Yep, that's the best for me. So there's a value indicator, a little yellow square, or maybe it's not yellow right now, to the right of the text that if you select that, a menu pops up, and one of them is create data binding, that little yellow one right there. That'll pop up a dialogue that guides us through creating the data binding. Mm-hmm. And so that drop down at the top left right now is set to data context, isn't it? I can't actually
see. It's data source.
Data source. And so that reads with the data context that is flowing down through the hierarchy of the page. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything set right now.
Yep.
But we're going to go ahead and just bypass that and select element name. Now, you didn't give a name to the element that we're about to do, but you can see there on the left, this is the visual, or this is the logical tree that we've set up. And so you can see the second one. Go ahead and select it. And then on the right-hand side, it lists all the properties that are available for you to bind to. We're going to bind to the text. I was thinking value, but no, it's text. We're going to bind to the text property. And is it there okay? Yeah, no problem. Before you do, though, I want to show what else is here. So there's a drop-down that you're over right now that allows me to pick any converter, and if it's not there, to go and just bring one in. It'll create the reference for me. We don't need to do it. Well, you can click it to show that it's empty.
Yep.
But if you had one, it would show up right there because it knows how to find them. But this is what's important right here. There's these four pieces that some of them weren't there in 8.0. Mm-hmm. They certainly are there for WPF and Silverlight developers. The one that we care about is this direction that we're going to change. So right now it defaults to two It defaults to 2. But we want to make sure that it's 2 because we want to read and write between the 2. But we also want to change that update trigger to
property changed.
To property change, so that as we're playing with it in this demo, we can see it as quickly as possible without tabbing out.
But there's 2 other values here that are actually new as part of 8.1. We have a fallback value and target null value.
Yeah, what is the fallback value?
So the fallback value, that's something that's going to be presented in there should there be no value available in the binding.
That's right. So if the binding is failing or the view model for one reason or not is not available or anything else, this is if nothing then this is what it really is. But that's a little bit different than the target null
value.
Value. I know that has the word target, and I know it has the word null, and it's very
it's right there.
And the target null value is actually very interesting because not every data type supports null, right?
Yes.
And null is a tricky concept because null means no value, not a default value.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, 0 is not null.
It's not null. That's exactly right. And so if you have a non-nullable int, which is just a standard int, you can't set it to null, but you might still need to represent something when you mean null. And so now I'll create a nullable int, bind it to this text box, and when it's null, I could set it to, say, pancake. And
as which I've seen in your apps. It explains a lot.
It's my go-to.
Pancake. Oh.
To load. What's even more amazing about that is the user then could type in pancake, and it translates back to null as well. It's really cool. It really is cool.
Okay.
All right, so let's go ahead and bind it. Now the first one is bound to the second one in a two-way, and it's triggered by the update.
So a couple of things have happened. We didn't have a name or
That's
any
right.
means of identifying the second text box, but in order to do this binding, we have to reference by a name.
Yeah.
And so we've actually added in a new attribute, x colon name. And now there's actually 2 attributes that are available. One's name and one's x colon name. What's the difference between those 2?
Without a doubt, x colon name is the one that most developers are intending to use because it handles 2 scenarios at one time. If you create a nested controls and each of them deserves the same name for one reason or another because you use them in and out of different scopes, and then you begin to put them in the same visual tree, those names will conflict. Even though it may be a user control with a deeply nested control with that name, it'll say that name is already in use. X colon name allows it to maintain inside the scope of whatever control you're using, as well as make it available for me to reference from code behind.
Okay.
In fact, if it's when you're in doubt, use X colon name.
Yeah, I would say that that's really a default. The other one being name, which just provides an ID that you use within the scope of your XAML.
That's right. A conflictable scope of your XAML is probably a good way to think about it.
Absolutely. So let's just reread this binding expression that's been created. And so if we move across text, now we have this curly brace.
Yeah, we do. This says something special, certainly not literal is what it really is.
Exactly.
Certainly not literal.
I mean, we've really created some sort of a XAML expression here.
That's right. And so as for expression, it's saying once the curly brace begins, it's expecting an expression. In other frameworks of XAML, we could create custom expressions. Mm-hmm. Right here, we have binding, which is basically saying, from this point forward, this is going to be a binding operation, and now all of the properties that flow need to be in the context of what binding can accomplish.
Yeah. And so the next thing that we show up is text. And really, this is a default value. We could also have path here.
That's right. Path equals text or text. They mean the same thing. What it's really pointing to is the property name.
Yeah, it's the property name of the thing that we're pulling this value from.
That's right.
Yep. And then the next...
element name. Right?
Element name.
Saying what it's going to bind to. Now, that is optional because without it, the default is the data context of the element.
Correct.
And so that means, you know, if my data context is the view model, then it would automatically be reading a property inside my view model called text.
Yeah. And so as we move across, we see mode equals two-way, update source trigger. So there's no magic that's been done by the designer to create some sort of invisible bunch of metadata. Everything is being expressed explicitly within the XAML itself. So we could just have typed that. We could have easily typed it.
What's beautiful about it, too, is you get full IntelliSense when you type it, so you get guided along the way. If you're the kind of guy who likes to type, then that's all you really need to do.
Yeah, so if I say delete mode.
Yep, that's right. Comma, space, and it's not just mode that's there, but all the other things that are applicable in the context of binding.
So if I autocomplete. I can then pull up the enumeration that's available, mm-hmm. specify two-way, and away we go. We've got back a valid string,
yeah,
and we're done.
It's nice. It's really nice.
So what we can see is the value of the first text box is going to be set to the value that's contained within the second text box.
Yeah, that's right. Let me ask you a practical question. So that's a pretty long line. Mm-hmm. I like to hit a couple line breaks here and there. Where do you put line breaks?
I tend to put them at the end of the attributes themselves. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it starts to become a little bit challenging with some of these.
Yeah, because binding expressions can be really long.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do it that way too, especially when you start adding in references to converters and then you have converter parameters.
Yeah.
You can't have that be, you know, 2 miles to the right. You want to be able to glance at it.
Yeah, now, of course, I'm running in a sort of resolution constrained environment because we're projecting and being recorded and so on. Typically, yeah. you know, these things would be infinitesimal on my screen.
Right. Okay, let's demonstrate this.
Let's run it up.
Be that the value of the first text box updates as you change the value of the second text box.
Yes, which of course, unfortunately, we have our little performance metrics sitting on top of here.
We'll put a margin in it so we don't have to look at that.
Absolutely.
And so what is that? Only because we're in debug mode, it's showing the frame rate. And that's a big deal because the frame rate that's being shown is the first indicator to you whether or not you're overloading the XAML presenter. So as it builds out your UI, if the frame rate slowly degrades and goes down and down and down, that's obviously a hint to you that mm-hmm. you're creating a visual tree that is taxing the system and going to give a bad experience to the user.
Yeah.
And, you know, I casually just said visual tree. And earlier we talked about the logical tree that you saw in the thing.
Yeah.
It's probably
just name dropping.
It's such a fundamental piece of XAML. I think it's at least
worth explaining.
So I have two. I have the visual tree and the logical tree. We start with the logical tree.
Yeah. That's really what we've expressed in XAML.
That's right. The logical tree is right. Since this is perfect XML, mm-hmm. XML is hierarchical the way that mm-hmm. you make it. It starts with a root element and goes kind of up from there in a way. That is the perfect logical tree as you go through all of your... But that button that you used earlier, or this text mm-hmm. box right here,
yep.
it's not just a text box.
Yeah.
To create that look, it's going to need a border. It's going to need a background. It's going to need all kinds of different visual elements to make it look pretty and nice. Mm-hmm. In fact, one interesting thing is if you right-click on this, I think this is worth showing.
Sure.
Right-click on the text box that's up in the designer. Let's do it from the designer. And when you do, you get an extra option at the bottom, and that is to edit the template. Now, every single control in XAML has a template. That's the way it's meant to look. That's mm-hmm. what a template is. It's a set of XAMLs that is applied to it by the system. That's why you can't say edit current, mm-hmm. because it's a read-only part yep. of the system. But you can say edit copy. Let's go ahead and do that. And before you do, let's go ahead and point this out, even though we'll talk about resources in a minute. It's asking where do you want to put this definition. So we're extracting it out of the text box and putting it into our application. That allows me to create a custom text box that may or may not have a border mm-hmm. or anything else I want to do. But maybe this is just for learning purposes. I just want to check it out. So put it wherever you want. I could put it at the application scope, which means I could use it on multiple pages. Or I could put it on this page, which means I could use it on multiple controls. All right. So, yeah, let's not look at the designer. Let's just check it out. And here's the, you can see it's very complex. I mean, a simple little text box.
Yeah.
Here it is. We can go through and see there's a bunch of styles being set.
So we can see that we get a name for the style, mm-hmm. which is going to be key if we want to use it. Mm-hmm. We can tell what it's targeting. We have a target type of text box, and then we have all of the setters, as you mentioned, for the various properties and the values that are being assigned.
Yeah, so earlier when you were saying it's a lot like CSS, this yeah. is really like CSS, where we name the property, the style
yep.
property name, and then we say what its value is. Then we have the way that it looks, and we'll talk more about visual states later, but you can just see there's really a lot to it, and including other controls that are in there, including border and other mm-hmm. pieces. So yep. this is where it's important, because this is only the visual implementation of the text box. You're wondering, you know, where's the event, the text changed event, and all these other things. Well, that's actually defined by the text box class itself.
Yep.
This is only the visual information.
And when we were talking about a content presenter previously, or a content control that showed the text, you know, here it is actually within the definition. So all these other things are visual elements associated with it. This content control is the actual element itself that shows the text that's yeah. within the text box.
Yeah, so that's right.
We're not going to dwell too much on this.
Let me say this one thing about it is that now that you're in it, you could tinker with this and have a custom text box from this point forward.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's really, really nice.
So if I flick back to the main page, what we can see now is this text box that I marked to create this template. Now I have this attribute that says style. We again have a XAML expression that says instead of a concrete value in the style field, we're going to reference a static resource called textBoxStyle1, which we just saw created.
That's right. So a static resource would contrast with dynamic resource. Basically, all that it means is this is a resource that will not change. It's almost like a one-time binding. And so we don't have a dynamic resource.
Yep.
That binding sort of acts like a dynamic resource. But in Windows 8.1, we do have a new concept called theme resource. And it allows us to not put all the things that we need as static resources in memory, but instead as a theme resource to call out to a resource that the system is holding and will only put into memory as we consume them.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to call out as well is you might notice a little bit of a different syntax on the margin here. Rather than having four numbers, comma separated, I have a single number, 100. There's a lot of flexibility in a lot of the value converters that are out there in that it will take this and apply it uniformly across all of the margins.
That's sort of like 100 comma 100 comma 100.
Absolutely. 100. And I could do 100 comma 50. And in that scenario, it would take 100, apply it to the left. It would take 50, apply it to the top. 50 to the bottom and 100 to the right.
150, 150. Got it. That's a nice little shorthand, and it's good to know because you'll see it and you'll be like, what are they doing?
Yeah. How the heck does that work? Well, now you know. So we have the margin, which now means if I run it, we should not be obscured by our diagnostics.
Right.
Okay. So what we have is our two text boxes. Now, you may recall in the designer, I actually had the value 1 in the first text box, but it's currently showing 2. Yeah. This shows us that the element binding is actually already working.
That's right.
The value in text box 2 has been driven into text box 1. So now if I type 3...
You may not have noticed, but that value is even in the designer. Binding works even in the designer.
So now...
Look, as you type, they both stay in sync. So in your mind, picture it this way. The bottom one is the text box, and the top one is your view model. And that means that your view model property value is staying in sync with whatever the UI is actually presenting.
Yep.
It's pretty awesome, really.
It is.
I mean, it's so easy that you can take it for granted, but it's actually so powerful that there's nothing like it. There's no other UI that can do it as performant or as rich.
Yeah. That's why we love XAML.
We do, don't we?
We do.
All right.
We want to show fallback value?
You know what? Let's do. I think it makes sense that when there's no value at all, you'll have a fallback value.
So let's show. Where am I?
So you'll be in the. Yeah, that's right. Fallback value equals. What are you going to put? Not in quotes, though, right?
Oh, you're exactly right.
If you had to have quotes, you could use single quotes.
Yeah.
But because this is valid XML, that's an XML rule that we're following.
So we've got pancake as a fallback value.
This is great.
Yeah.
It's pancakes becoming a theme.
Exactly.
I had waffles for breakfast, so it's not my fault. Now, why didn't it work? The reason is fallback value says if there is no value, this is the value I'll show. But you did have a value.
Yeah. Now we've actually cleared this one. We still have a value because...
Your value is just string.empty.
String.empty.
Yeah.
So we have to bear in mind sometimes that you can fall into these traps of what you expect something to do as opposed to what it's actually going to do.
Even if you went back to code now and cleared out the text, the default value of a text box is
string.empty.
String.empty, so you would never see the fallback value.
Yeah. So we'd only see it if we were doing binding and the actual underlying value was null, which is an absence of any value.
That's right. Or there's an error that, you know, like you're waiting to give a reference to the view model for one reason or another, and so the fallback value would appear. In my experience, fallback value is most useful for design time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have data to show, so you show it at design time.
Yep.
Perfect.
Okay.
Well, let's think about it. So we talked about XAML and the basic syntax around XAML, how it really is just valid XML, but what it's really referencing are full classes that are implemented inside the runtime. And so you can set properties of those classes by using the attributes on the element itself, or you can have rich set by using the complex property type. Yeah, by say like we did with background and then using a solid color brush. Then we also can keep going, and there's this long hierarchy that represents the logical tree, but we have the visual tree of all the other elements built together that are hidden inside the template.
Yep.
Sometimes it's very important when you need to sniff through to make a change in your UI at runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a visual tree helper to allow you to kind of get into that. We also talked about the power of binding and how using binding we are able to bind to other elements on the page, but as well we can bind to the classes or view models that we might have behind it.
Yeah.
And we mentioned that view models sometimes can be overkill, but that's probably the edge case in
that's
most
the edge
cases.
Case. In any sort of non-trivial application, you're almost certainly going to have at least one view model.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say if you don't have a view model, you're doing it wrong, because it's not always true, but it is often true.
Yeah. You're probably doing it wrong.
You're probably doing it wrong. We also started looking at the controls. We looked at the text box. We looked at the text block. And there are so many more. There's sliders and buttons and layout controls and everything
plus
else like
that. Plus all
the
new controls that were introduced as part of 8.1.
And then between 8.0 and 8.1, we had new controls to look at. And we'll talk about some of those in a little bit, right? Like the hub control, and it's very powerful.
Yep. The command bar.
The command bar that we have, exactly.
You're going to say educated.
Yeah, it's going to be great soon.
Yeah, fly out.
Okay. Let's do this. Let's take a 10-minute break. We went through the basics. We'll come back to part three of XAML. Now we'll start going through some of the foundational controls at more depth rather than just mentioning them like this. Let's take 10 minutes and come right back. Thanks.